I am a felon. I'm a felon who owns 15 companies. I'm a felon who, is a real estate agent. I'm a burglar who's being trusted walking into other people's houses. I'm entrusted with their keys now. And before, I didn't even need a key. I'd just roll right into your house and take your DVDs or your, whatever it was that I could turn into cash.
Candid conversations that might just change how you look at the world. Let's bridge cultures, transcend borders, and build a global family of changemakers. Welcome to If By Chance.
Chris Dreisbach has a full life. A successful serial entrepreneur with multiple enterprises, he relies on teams of people to keep his businesses running smoothly. This far-reaching conversation covers business, his background, and finding a path back to purpose. And just a warning, it also touches on recreational drug use.
I burglarized a house, a bunch of houses, in 2004 and 5 and 6 when I was addicted to heroin. And the lady Brenda, whose house I burglarized and got arrested for in 2006, she actually reached out to me about a year ago and told me how proud she was of me and how honored she was to be my friend because I accepted her Facebook friend request. And wow, like we turned that into a TikTok video that got a couple million views. And then I actually went up and met with her and we filmed it. And just what a beautiful moment to, connect with the woman who I terrified and scared in 2006. And to have her just want to be my friend and just want to be near me is a true testament of recovery and a true testament of whatever kind of power or deity you believe in. that's real right there. And
do you remember the burglaries? Or were you really high at the time?
I was not high at the time when I was there because I knew her daughter from my high school. And I knew that she was a diabetic. And at the time in America, I don't know how it is in Australia, but we couldn't get clean needles from a pharmacy. We would have to go steal them, buy them, whatever it might have been. So I had to identify who was diabetic and then go take their needles if I wanted to have a clean needle. And I got hepatitis when I was 17 because I was using other people's needles over and over and over. And, it's just not a good thing. I got rid of it in 2017 and I didn't die, but it was completely unnecessary to put people at risk like that. I could have gotten HIV. I could have gotten God knows what by using other people's needles. And it's such a simple concept to just let people have access to stuff. To me, it's a very politicized thing too. So
here in Australia, we actually have, I guess they call them injector clinics in
really?
Some places. Yeah.
Are they effective? Are they working well?
It's hard to say. So I'm not really familiar with this space, but and a lot of people can get methadone as well. And I'm not sure, again, how effective that is in terms of transitioning people.
I mean, there's unscrupulous people who want to keep you on methadone so that they can continue to charge you or bill your insurance. And they don't really push you towards living life. They just kind of keep you where you are. And, I'm sure that happens everywhere. I'm sure it's not just purely American thing. And but I've never had the honor of going to Australia, so I don't know, how things are. So I'm genuinely curious when you tell me stuff like that. And
so how long have you been helping people?
I got sober in 2007, August of 2007. So it's been 16 years, almost 17, I guess. It's been a while. Yeah. Getting old over here. We're at, I think, close to 180 people at Blueprints right now. The rehab specifically, but I also have 14 other companies that I run and or invest in or operate. And I think, all told, probably 250 or so people.
So you were saying that you involved in 14 companies?
14 other ones. It's actually 15 total.
15. Okay. Do you want to rattle them off, or can you put them into buckets? What are we talking about?
Yeah, let's try and figure it out. Let's see. Blueprints for Addiction Recovery. That's on the hoodie right here. That's the Drug and Alcohol Treatment Center. It's my baby. Recently, I actually had a baby, so I stepped back from my role as the active day-to-day CEO of Blueprints, and I hired who's already working with me, Ben McCoy, just a genius of a guy to take over for me as the CEO, so I could focus a little bit more on family and a little bit more on all the other companies. But let's see, we have Red Rose Sports Cards, which is on the hat right here. I usually have at least.
So you've got a whole lot of merch so you can remember what you're involved in. Is that how it works?
Mostly, and I'm gigantic, so I'm 6'5", 280 pounds, so it's very difficult for me to find normal clothing, so I just kind of make my own, or order my own specially, and that's Red Rose Sports Cards, literally exactly what it says, sports cards, Pokemon cards, magic cards, all sorts of trading cards. We have SO Arts, which is a really cool art gallery collective in downtown Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which has over 70 local creative artists displaying their wares in our spot downtown. We have the Nine Collective, which is a really interesting metaphysical collective store that's run by my friend Zoe, who's just unbelievable as it relates to things like that. I don't know too much about them, but I believed in her and invested in her, and I don't regret it for a second. We have Doughheads Waffles, which is a really cool food truck with Liege style waffles, and we stuff them with things like buffalo chicken and all sorts of crazy desserts, and people love those. In the food service world, we have Full Service Concessions, which is also a shared commercial kitchen with municipal concessions for different community pools, different schools, et cetera, but it also gives an incubator for other small businesses to grow and have a safe place to prepare their food. What the heck else is going on around here? We have Hawkstone Real Estate, Hawkstone Property Management are two separate companies, but it's a real estate brokerage and a property management brokerage. What else do we have going on?
I think you're about seven or eight.
Yeah, there's more here. I don't know why I can't think of them.
How do you keep track of it all?
Great teams. That's how I keep track of everything. If it was just me, everything would have fallen apart a long, long time ago. But thankfully, the people who are around me are so good at what they do that I don't have to give my attention to every company every day. And that's why it's kind of easy to forget some of them, because some of them just operate so smoothly that I'm pretty rarely putting time into them. More than just a phone call or just a, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about that kind of thing? But if you go to my social media stuff, it's probably all listed on there. And I'm sure we could figure out the rest of them too. And I feel bad because I'm sure my partners and all those companies would be quite upset that I forgot.
Well, then let me ask you, because I know this is it's a really tough challenge for people when it comes to hiring. It's one of their biggest problems when it comes to business. So do you think you've got that nailed? Have you got any tips?
I mean, what we did at Blueprints, which was the biggest of all the companies, obviously, just treating people well and paying them well, really playing into their strengths, playing into their passions, making sure the people that you're hiring want to be there. I think all of those things are pretty decent tips. For how to retain employees at the very least. But tax people less is probably a good way to, boost employment. A friendly reminder for everybody in America. I don't know how taxes are in Australia, but we're pretty burdened over here.
Yeah, we're also the same. But yeah, when you've got When you're interviewing someone for a role, which you probably don't do so much of anymore, was there anything in particular that you looked out for?
Passion and heart. Because those are the two things you can't teach somebody, in my opinion. And, you know, when times get tough in a certain job or a certain industry, it's really important to have that thing to hold on to, the thing that you know is going to drive you through the difficult time to get back to the good times, or even, you know, elevate to a completely new good time. And so passion and heart, I think, are the two things that are the most noticeable when you're in an interview or when you're doing something like that. Those are the things that I always look for, even in friendships and even in associates that I have, is, you know, if you don't have passion, if you don't have heart for what we're doing, why are we doing it? You know?
And can you tell me why you've started all of those companies? Is there a common thread?
There is a common thread, actually. It's helping elevate folks, not just in recovery, because, you know, recovery is real deep to my heart and very personal to me. And most of my business partners are in recovery, but not all of them. And I think it kind of just became, I realized I was pretty good at building businesses and building people and helping people achieve their dreams. And that's truly what the common thread is in all of them, is my partners were able to achieve their dreams through this. And consequently, I too have been living my dream of helping people in so many different ways. I couldn't be happier.
So when I've spoken to people before about being in recovery, one of the themes that tends to pop up is that for someone that's really struggling, there's a hole in their life.
Yeah.
And it's really about finding their passion and purpose, and that's what gets them through and helps them transform. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that 1,000,000%. We actually, I don't think it's available in Australia, but we have a mini docuseries called Repurposed that we went around and interviewed very interesting, you know, celebrity folks who are in recovery, and turned it into a little mini series, if you will, that got put on Prime Video in the UK and the US. So I don't think anybody in Australia can see it, but we are going to be releasing them to YouTube at some point. So hopefully Australia's got that. I'm thinking you do. I feel like everybody's got YouTube.
Yeah.
But Repurposed is all about how people who lost purpose refound it. And the stories are so vastly different. You know, the first one was a guy named Brandon Novak, who was on, you know, Jackass movies, and was a professional skateboarder. And he had some wild, wild experiences in his life, and he turned it around and was just, you know, gone worldwide helping people at this point. And his story is just unbelievable to watch. And then, you know, the second one was a guy who ran for vice president here in the United States a couple years ago. And his story is much less, you know, outwardly dramatic, but it's so deep and powerful and personal. And he's such a funny guy. I mean, it made a perfect episode. And the third one was a Nashville recording artist, Mike Miz, who was a good friend of mine. And, you know, his path back to purpose was just unbelievable. And the fourth one was a former Major League Baseball pitcher who had a serious alcohol problem. And his path back to finding purpose led him to working in treatment and working to help other people get help. And, you know, so finding that passion, finding purpose is the number one thing for recovery, because if you don't have a purpose in life, you know, are you truly living? You know, that's the real question. And when I was on drugs, when I was, you know, going in and out of jail, I had no purpose. I led a purposeless life entirely. And, you know, my purpose kind of became numbing myself or hurting everybody around me and, you know, causing problems, creating crime. That was my life. And once I entered recovery, it was kind of shown to me very quickly how much I loved helping people find the peace that I found. And I haven't stopped for a whole long time.
Can you tell me about your time in jail?
Sure. There were a few trips. The first one, I was in my home area
in Pennsylvania here called Lehigh County Prison. And the first thing I like to talk about when I talk about jail experiences is how I had to trade my name in. I was no longer Chris Dreisbach. I became number 0131644. And I'll never forget that number, not just because I talk about it every single day of my life, but because that was me. I was no longer a human. I was an animal in a cage. And I was assigned a number. If I got arrested in that county again, I would still have the same number, 0131644. I would trade my name in. And there's not much more dehumanizing than trading your name in. And then to further push it, you have to trade in your clothing. You get humiliated. It's just, there's nothing productive or valuable about the American criminal justice system the way it was. Now, thankfully, in 2024, we're starting to make tiny, tiny strides towards treating people like humans. I don't think you have to trade your name in anymore. I don't think, for the most part, you have access to services, treatment in a lot of places. I'm sure a lot of places are really antiquated and not awful, I'm sure. My experience, nothing super tragic happened to me. I mostly just laid around and read or hustled people with chess or spades or, I made money to eat by writing letters for people who spoke only Spanish, helping them with court cases, things like that. So nothing really tragic happened to me except for I was plucked from everything that I knew, tossed in a cage, stripped of my clothing, stripped of my name, stripped of my life, and, left to that for months and months on end. Nothing terrible, no sexual assaults, nothing, although I have heard plenty of stories from plenty of folks who've had trauma and really dangerous things happen to them while incarcerated. Thankfully, none of that happened to me. But I think there's so much dehumanization and so much shame associated with being a criminal or being a felon that you almost are set up for failure before you even get out. And, that's one of the things that I crusade against, because I am a felon. I'm a felon who owns 15 companies. I'm a felon who, is a real estate agent. I'm a burglar who's able to, be entrusted walking into other people's houses. I'm entrusted with their keys now. And that's just another testament to the power of recovery, because before, I didn't even need a key. I'd just roll right into your house and take your DVDs or your, whatever it was that I could turn into cash.
How far back do you think jail set you back after being incarcerated?
I don't know that it set me back at all, honestly. I was doing so little of value each time that I went to jail. It probably propelled me forward, to be honest. I mean, I was just such a tragedy when I was a youth, really all that I was doing was hurting people. All that I was doing was running around and making my family ashamed of me and running around and making my little brother scared of me. Really, I wasn't up to much good. But could it have been handled differently by the system, by society? Absolutely. And I'm thankful that now in 2024, I'm able to crusade for the folks who are going through that stuff right now. And, a lot of the, even being arrested, we started programs here in Lancaster County where if you have a drug problem and you are pulled over by police or you encounter police, we've trained our police here in Lancaster County to offer them options of treatment instead of incarceration when appropriate and when deemed appropriate by our district attorney and the officer on the street. Stuff like that never would have happened in 2006. Every single time I encountered a police officer, I was treated like an animal, treated like a criminal, and tossed in a cage. And, just to be on the side of activity and standing shoulder to shoulder with law enforcement and saying, hey, I'm a felon, you're a police officer, we can be friends, we can work together for public health, we can work together for the communities that we serve and give people access to treatment that they need instead of being tossed in a cage.
Why did you change?
That's a good question. I think it was providential. Yeah, why did I change is a really tough question, because it was after my third trip to Lehigh County Prison, I saw the same judge, and that judge sent me to a treatment center again, a very progressive judge for the time. And at that treatment center, I got to meet, you know, my counselor. And my counselor was this little hippie guy, maybe 5'8", 140 pounds soaking wet. And this little hippie, he recognized that I only had the clothes on my back that I got arrested with. And it was getting cold up here where I was. And he saw that I just had a tie-dye t-shirt and like a blood-stained pair of shorts. And he gave me the sweatshirt off of his back. And I'm, again, 6'5", you know, probably 220 or 230 at that time. And he's a little guy, about half my size. And he gave me that sweatshirt. It didn't fit me very well. It was like a sad little belly shirt. But I felt a little bit warmer. For the first time in my life, I think I was able to receive love. Not that, you know, my parents didn't love me, other people didn't love me, but that was the first time in a long time that I felt love and I felt able to receive it. And I don't even think at that moment it was half profound to me. It was just like, oh, I got a little sweatshirt, you know, how crappy is this? That was probably my terrible perception of the situation at the time. And looking back on it, that guy was so instrumental in my entire life, and he recently died. You know, just so sad. But, you know, that moment, not that it propelled me towards recovery or like pushed me and told me that's where I had to go. At the end of it, he recommended I go to a halfway house, and I didn't want to go to a halfway house. I just wanted to go back downtown and give it another try. And even though it had never worked before for me, my brain still told me it was a good idea to go back and give it another shot. He was much smarter than I was, thankfully, and he sent me to this halfway house that my parole officer also recommended I go to or go back to jail. So that's why I ended up. And this halfway house was here in Lancaster County. That was almost 17 years ago, and I haven't left. And while I was at that halfway house, they gave me at least enough therapy to be able to start working on retraining my brain and also let me get in touch with a group of young, excited guys in recovery here who showed me a different way to live. And with that, I latched onto it, because as I was following them, as I was running around to these meetings with them and doing, you know, community service work and all the stuff that I was never able to do before, I started to feel peace and I started to feel happiness and I started to be able to sleep at night and I started to be comfortable in all these situations that I was never comfortable in before. The power of what happened to me was so undeniable that even a stubborn dummy like me couldn't argue it. So I don't know that I ever really wanted to change. I don't know if I was even trying. I just kind of did the work and got the results.
This thing that strikes me about that counselor in the t-shirt is that he was under no obligation to give it to you.
None. He could have very easily just walked away.
Whereas when we've got loved ones, you know, our parents, sometimes we might feel that they're obligated to do nice things for us. But when a complete stranger goes out of their way for us, I wonder if that's what had the impact on you.
I mean, it's so meaningful to look back on. And, you know, that guy was just always selfless, always trying to help people. And it's a perfect person to look up to in recovery and in life. And, you know, just that little moment, you know, he used to play guitar for us and, you know, coming out of jail, not having been able to listen to music for months and months and months on end, you know, just hearing the guitar, just hearing his passion for the guitar, hearing his voice, hearing, you know, all that stuff just kind of awakens me to life and really just perfect thing after perfect thing happened. You know, I'd landed in the right spot at the right time over and over and over again. And I still believe almost 17 years later that I am landing in the right spot at the right time over and over and over and over and over again, because I don't oppose the flow of life anymore. I just kind of go with it.
So how do you view mistakes?
Normally, right away, I beat myself up over them horrifically, internally and in my head. And shortly after that, I recognize that I'm being a dummy, and I realize that mistakes are just learning experiences, and I'm going to grow and become a better version of myself. And
it's always difficult to see that in the moment, because in the moment after you make a mistake and you realize it, it's very real in here. It's often difficult, even for a person who's practiced it for a lot of years, to stop and take yourself out of the moment, recognize that there's so much beauty on the other end. So that's how I view mistakes now, but I also beat myself up every single time I do anything even remotely wrong.
Can I ask you your view on recreational drug use?
Ooh, that's a good question. That's a really good question. For me, I don't advocate for it. I don't personally use drugs recreationally anymore. I have known scores of people who have been able to successfully recreationally use drugs. I don't judge them for that. If you as a human being deem it to be okay for your life, then that's your life, not mine. And I'm not going to impose my thoughts or my will on you and your life. More power to you. And if you run into a moment where recreationally using drugs is no longer happening for you, when it's hurting you and it's hurting people around you, be armed with the facts about how to get better and reach out and get help. And don't be ashamed. Don't be afraid to do that, because it takes so much more strength to reach out for help than to just suffer alone.
What do you think the signs are for someone that believes they're a recreational user that things might be going downhill?
There's a lot of different signs you can look for, and I think they're different for each individual. And that's why it's really tough to throw a blanket over addiction or a blanket over substance use disorder, because everybody is so different. Everybody has a different background, a socioeconomic background. I mean, there's just hundreds of different things that differentiate us. But, if you're using drugs or drinking and you can't go through a day without it, I would definitely think you might have an issue. If you almost feel bored all the time without it, or kind of purposeless, like we were talking about earlier, or generally disinterested in most things that you used to be interested in, those were all pretty clear signs that there could be an issue. If you start losing your job, if you start, doing those things, start to see economic impacts, if you start to, have health issues, there's so many different reasons to look into it. But it's a real deeply personal thing for every single person I've ever worked with in recovery, as to kind of why they've shifted towards recovery versus the life that they used to live. And, while we can talk about those potential warning signs, it's really a deeply personal thing. And, I've worked with a lot of folks that really weren't even addicted to drugs. They just had tried them a few times and, they felt off about it, or there was something amiss inside of them and they needed to get into some kind of mental health treatment. And there's no shame in that. There's literally no shame in trying to improve yourself at any time.
Do you think that we need to change the way we look at addiction? Or do you think it's just a matter of having more centers like you already have?
Well, I mean, it depends on how you look at it. There's different camps of folks. Some people think it's a moral failing still, despite the fact that science has proven otherwise many, many times. My story proves otherwise every time I tell it. I have strong willpower in a whole lot of areas. I just lost almost 100 pounds. Folks who have weak willpower can't do stuff like that. I've been able to do tons of things that was very improbable for a person who used to eat out of dumpsters and go to jail over and over again. And people with weak willpower typically can't do stuff like I've done. I had a brain disease that caused me to do things that were out of character. And it caused me to continue driving myself further and further and further into the hole against my will. And if you believe that, like I do wholeheartedly, I don't think you have to change your opinion too much, because you understand that it's a brain disease. If you're in the camp where you believe it's a moral failing or a shortcoming of a person, I think you should probably change, or you should probably at least talk to some folks who've experienced it with an open mind. I'm fairly libertarian with pretty much everything, and I just don't like to impose my will on other people. If you want to believe that, keep believing it. But truly, if it happens to somebody you love or somebody in your family, start believing. Go to war for them. Do everything you can to help them. That's all I wish. I just want everybody to be happy. I want everybody to feel loved and seen and heard. You know, life's just so much better when we focus on love and positivity.
If we have a person in our lives or a loved one who's suffering, how can we best support them?
Love. Love them. Do not shame them. Don't make them feel bad for things they've done, even if the things they've done were bad. I don't know too much about the local resources in different areas of Australia, in different areas of, other places, but reach out to, local treatment centers, reach out to local resources, maybe government resources. I'm not entirely sure how things work down there, down under, if you will. And I had to say it, at least once today.
Yes, of course.
But truly reach out. Constantly reach out. Keep reaching out until you receive the answers that are going to help your loved one.
What impact are you trying to make?
Any impact I can. Hopefully, people look at me, a big, goofy, bearded, clown, and I'm able to do all these different things, and I'm able to live happy and live free and feel peace and share love and do all this stuff. My hope is that if somebody's struggling, if somebody's hurting, if somebody is in a position that they can improve, and they look at my ugly mug, maybe possibly they say, if this guy can do it, I can do it. Education is super important, because for folks who don't understand what's happening in the brain of an addicted person, how could they be in the best position to help them? So, going around training law enforcement, trying to change the game of the criminal justice system locally here, massively important. That's one of the biggest impacts I hope to make, is to change the criminal justice system everywhere so that more people like me don't have to trade in their names for numbers and don't have to be dehumanized and don't have to go through traumatic events to recover and find hope. Really, just to keep connecting with people and honestly growing this awesome community of people I now have legitimately worldwide. I love it. I love it all so much.
Are you a big planner? Do you have the next 3 months all planned out?
So by necessity, I have a calendar that tells me where I'm going to be. But no, I really, if we look back at my life, if you'd asked me where I was going to be in 5 years in 2009, I would have told you waiting tables. If you'd asked me where I was going to be in 1 year in 2010, I would have told you running a recovery house. If you'd asked me where I was going to be in 1 year in 2014, I would have told you still running that recovery house operation. If you asked me last year where I was going to be, it wasn't here. So every single time I plan or I think I know where I'm going, the universe says, nope, you're going that way. My plans always lead me the wrong way. And as soon as I was able to recognize that the universe flows way better than I do personally, my life took off and my life became beautiful. So no, I am not a planner. Even though I have to have some plans, I try not to.
You seem a very laid-back guy.
Yes.
And I think in the business world, you're probably not the norm. So
no.
I'm trying to understand how someone that's so laid back and yet doesn't like it when they make mistakes has been able to build, can I call it an empire?
Sure. Very small empire. Not quite the Mongolian Empire, the British Empire, But I can't tell you how or why this has all happened for me. I'm just here and I'm thrilled. Do everything I get to do, and just to be able to go from where I was in 2005 and 2006 and 2007 to just being able to fall asleep at night without sitting up all night and thinking and stressing and worrying, all those different things, that alone is enough of a blessing for me to be thrilled. And so everything on top of that is cake. I plan to be dead by 20, and I've made it to 37. I had a beautiful baby boy almost 2 years ago, Chris Drysbach Jr. If it wasn't for recovery, if it wasn't for any of those things, I wouldn't have that little man. I love that little man more than anything on earth. And I mean, it just, how do you get successful by being laid back is probably find the right people, surround yourself with people who are good at what they do, surround yourself with passionate people who care about what they do, and support them.
Are you good with money?
Yeah. Oh yeah. That is one of my main skills is financial wizardry and moving things around and turning money into more money.
Can you talk to me about that?
Different ways to talk about it. You know, real estate, I don't know what the real estate game's like in Australia, but up here, you know, there's a ton of opportunity to be able to, you know, take land and, you know, prove a house and flip it and sell it for more money. And that's one of the easier ways that I've made money in the past. You know, truly anything. You can almost monetize any passion, especially now with the internet and, you know, so much stuff being available. You could almost make money out of anything. Back in the day, I used to love smoking marijuana, so I started selling marijuana. Made sense to me. Even younger than that, I would shovel every bit of snow anywhere that ever happened for $5 here and there because I've just always been a worker. And, you know, trading my time or my energy or my effort for finance, it always makes sense to me. And, you know, being in a situation where I don't have to stress or struggle for money anymore, you know, now I'm able to trade my time and my energy for free. I don't know if that even remotely answered your question, but...
No, it does. But I'm going to ask you, if all the businesses and all your money were gone and you just had $20, what would you do?
I would definitely try and turn it back into some more money because, I mean, you know, you can't live on $20 here. I don't know how it is down there, but, you know, $20 barely buys you a couple of cheeseburgers anymore. So what I would probably do is I would go locate something that I know I can take to a different area and sell for more money, take that to that different area, create the additional money, make the effort to go back to the other place, get more of it, head back to where I make more money. And, you know, just, I don't know what that would be. Would it be candy? Would it be, you know, whatever? Would it be, maybe I'd take that $20 and go shovel some snow. Maybe I would mow lawns. Maybe I would just trade my physical effort for cash. Maybe I would trade my physical effort for cash while I was selling things. I'm a little bit crazy, so. You know, I hated school. I almost failed entrepreneurship class in high school. And that's a complete joke to me because, you know, my entire life has become entrepreneurship and I almost failed the class in high school. So I don't think every situation is for everybody. And once you find that passion or once you find that thing it is that makes you tick, you're never bored again. I haven't been bored for well over a decade. This point, I have not felt boredom for a really long time.
Are you doing the same things over and over each day, or are they different things?
Every single day is pretty different, but at the end of the day, everything is kind of the same thing over and over because I wake up, see where I can be of service to the world, even if that is the same thing every day. It usually isn't. But at the end of the day, you live long enough, you're kind of redoing the same thing over and over. And I'm starting to get that at 37, where, you know, history repeats itself. But no, every day is pretty different. Lately, I've been more focused on family. So when I wake up in the morning, you know, I get to hang out with the family sometimes. Sometimes I have to run off and go to work. And, you know, it's always different. And then what work do I go to? You know, that's the other entertaining thing is, I want to go hang out at the sports card shop where I was tonight from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Then I could go to my office and do some real estate work afterwards, which is where I was from like 8:15 to, you know, 10. And, you know, then I came back here and I'm hanging out with you now. And, like, every day is so different.
You have a very, very full life. There's a lot going on.
I do. And, you know, if you build a life that you don't need a vacation from, you don't need to take a vacation.
And I feel like that is what I've done. Well, really neat vacation, unless you're offering a trip to Australia, at which point I'll debate it.
What haven't we covered that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I feel like we ran a pretty good gamut here. You know, really, what's super important to me is if you are struggling, even if you're in Australia, you know, like a bajillion miles away from where I am, if you have Facebook, if you have Instagram, if you have TikTok, if you have LinkedIn, if you have any of those weird social media apps, look me up. If you want to talk, I'm just crazy enough to talk to you. I promise I don't have an overinflated sense of self or ego or anything. I will always answer every message that I see, especially if you need help, especially if you're struggling, especially if you're hurting. Whatever it is, reach out to me.
Any last words you want to leave this week?
Hey, honestly, first off, thank you for inviting me on here with you. Thank you to everyone and anyone who listens to this and doesn't think I'm completely insane. But really, truly, you know, if you want to improve your life, do so. You know, if you're struggling, if you're hurting, if you're, you know, just not where you want to be, reach out. Even if it's not to me, reach out to somebody, reach out to anybody. Don't ever be ashamed or afraid of what you feel, how you feel, who you are, anything like that. Because as soon as you understand yourself, embrace yourself, and love yourself, your life can take you wherever it is you want to go. I can tell you this because I am a felon, burglar, real estate agent, and none of that makes any sense. I was the CEO of a licensed healthcare facility for 8 years. That doesn't make sense. I lived in parks. I ate out of dumpsters. I went to jail. I traded my name for a number. I embarrassed my family. I ashamed my family. And my mom hasn't lost a day of sleep over me in at least 17 years. Well, I'll tell you, you can literally just do anything you want. And I believe in you, even though I've never met you.
Chris's journey is a testament to the power of purpose and the power of love. If this episode has brought up anything for you, please do what Chris asks and reach out. There's also a link to Worldwide Helplines in the show notes.
Now, dear listener, it's your turn. Have you got something to add to the conversation? Then get in touch via the links in the show notes. Whether you have questions, a message of support, or resources that you think might help, we'd love to hear from you. And if by chance you know someone with a story that will inspire others, be sure to let us know. Your contributions help turn inspiration into action, drive positive change, and make life just that little bit better. And if this conversation inspired you to expand your worldview, head to hellohuman.global to join the conversation.